Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Nuclear Bombshell Series by John Zacor. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Danny Gavigan, Nora Ashrati, Ken Jackson, Elizabeth Jernigan, Colleen Delaney, Lily Beacon, Richard Cutting, Katie Karkoff, Kimberly Gilbert, Casey Platt, Tim Getman, Yasmin Toison, Michael Glenn, Sherry Berg, Tracy Oliveira, Christopher Sheeran, Dylan Lynch, David Harris, Michael John Casey, Nick DePinto, Eric Messner, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. The Blue-Haired Bombshell.
The vine twisted itself around my neck, squeezing tighter and tighter. No way I was going to let the holographic epitaph on my tombstone read, Zachary Nixon Johnson, August 15, 2022 to December 1st, 2062, the last private investigator on Earth, whacked by a plant. To make matters worse, I hadn't even had my morning cup of joe yet. All my good buddy Dr. Randy Poole said was to come by and pick up my new gun. He never bothered to mention that he'd added an arboretum to his lab and populated it with killer plants. That's what I get for hanging out with mad mega-geniuses. My holographic assistant Harv appeared before me, looking down his nose at me while shaking his head.
Well, this is another fine mess you've gotten yourself into.
Me? You should have warned me that Randy's lab is being overrun by killer plants.
Zach, one, these are plants. They can't exactly run. Two, since Randy modified his computer systems, I no longer have complete access. Randy built me, so he is the one person who can construct defenses to keep me out. It's really quite impressive. Three, they are defensive plants. So technically, they are just defending themselves. It's what they do. If you read your email from Dr. Poole, you'd know this.
I tugged on the vine that had a death grip on my throat.
Yeah, they're defending themselves quite well.
Yes, they are very good at what they do.
Another vine grappled onto my left ankle, snaking up my leg.
Can you help?
Being a hologram, I'm not exactly built to get physical, though I am working on it.
In the past, you've allowed me to amplify and use the electromagnetic energy from my body as a weapon.
True, but the new computer modifications Randy has done to his lab are also limiting our interface. I can give you the weakness of the great plant that this plant is based on, though. Ooh, also, they are very susceptible to cold.
Great! Can you lower the temperature in the building?
Yes.
Good! Do it!
Of course, I can only lower the temperature 5 degrees. Not nearly enough to make a difference.
With Harv not being much help, I looked around the room for other options. As I said, I was in the arboretum of my more than slightly eccentric, mad scientist buddy, Dr. Randy Poole's lab. And until a few moments before, I had no idea that the lab even had an arboretum. Randy was mainly an electronic and virtual kind of guy. I didn't even know he had an interest in botany. Like everything else in Randy's lab, the arboretum was first class, over the top and through the roof, with a touch of geek. It was a room domed in clear plexiglass. And when I say room, I mean big room. At least as large as my house. I'm not sure how I hadn't noticed this before. There was a nice paved path traversing the room that was lined with vines and dotted with benches to sit on. Holographic birds, at least I assume they were holograms, flew back and forth in the background. Unlike the main area of Randy's lab, this area was designed to be quiet and serene. This was meant to be a nice place for one to sit and collect their thoughts. Except, of course, for the killer grapevines, though I was fairly certain these weren't the norm. I glanced around the room. Randy was there, but he'd be no help, as he was completely entwined by a vine as well. The vine had him so wrapped up, I could barely make out his red hair peeking through the top of the plant. Another plant had a tall, blue-haired Asian woman in its clutches. Even with most of her entangled in plant vines, I could tell she was easy on the eyes. From the blue hair, I knew she was probably from the moon. A mooner, as we call them here on Earth. She was struggling, but to no avail. I needed to do something, and do it fast. If I had my gun, I could pop it into my hand and blow the plants away. Now there's something I never thought I'd say. Of course, if I had my gun, I wouldn't be here. Another vine wrapped around my other leg. That reminded me that while I was without my gun, I had supplemented my weapons with a handy good old-fashioned knife I kept in a right ankle holster. Harv looked at me.
You're thinking about your love for weapons again, aren't you?
It's more a need than a love.
You probably should go for your knife before the vine goes for your arms. You're just fortunate that vines haven't been designed to deal with such well-armed opponents yet.
That didn't make a lot of sense to me, but then again, neither did the entire concept of attack plants. I stretched my left arm down toward my right ankle while trying to pull my leg up away from the vine. I had to give Randy props. He'd engineered these plants to be quite strong. I stretched my arm out as far as I could, extending my fingers. I felt the tendons in my hands tightening. I was less than half a centimeter away, but that half centimeter might as well have been half a kilometer. Out of reach was out of reach. Just as I thought all was lost, my knife popped up from my ankle holster into my outstretched hand.
That was me. I magnetized the left wrist portion of your underarm.
Well, what do you know? You are a useful supercomputer after all.
My first move was to grab the part of the vine nearest my neck with my right hand, pulling it to make it nice and rigid. I slid it. I slid the dead vine off my throat and threw it to the ground.
I thought Randy's new computer system was limiting you.
I bent over to slash the vine around my right leg.
It was, but I found a workaround.
With my right leg now free, I turned toward my left. The vine swung at me with a free tendril. I caught the swinging tendril with my right hand before it could do any damage. Pulling the vine toward me, I cut it when it became taut. I bent down and sliced the vine off my left leg. Now I was free to spring into action. Brandishing my knife, I raced toward my trapped friend and his shapely cohort. I made a snap decision to free Randy first. I know they usually say ladies first, but Randy was not only closer, he was struggling much harder. Besides, Randy may be overly eccentric, but he's one of the greatest minds on Earth. The world needed him. It eased my psyche that, for her part, the woman didn't seem worried at all. I'd bet my 1986 Mets poster that the woman was more able to take care of herself in this situation than Randy was. Reaching him, I grabbed the vine that had a python-like grip on his throat and slashed it. Randy pulled the excess vine parts away from his throat.
Are you dossing crazy?
Not exactly the thanks I was expecting. I realized then he'd been struggling to free himself so he could stop me from slicing up his plants, not because he was worried about his own health.
Maybe.
Plants, stand down!
The plant released its grip on Randy. I looked over at Randy's companion. She was also now free. Randy dusted himself off, glaring at me all the while.
Don't you read the emails I send?
I skim them.
You skim them.
You do send me a lot of email.
I've only sent you 23 messages this week.
Yeah, but Randy, it's only Tuesday.
Every message I send you is of the utmost importance.
Randy, you send me more email than my mother and people trying to sell me natural male enhancement combined.
Well, your mother hasn't inserted a multi-million credit, super highly advanced cognitive computer into your brain, has she?
No, of course not.
As for those other people, I won't even justify that with a comment. Though you probably could use some help in that area.
I pointed to the tall Asian woman.
Remember, I like to keep her being attached to my brain a secret.
Please, Zach. Melda here knows all about all my greatest inventions. I trust her completely. She's working with me on guard plants for the moon.
Guard plants for the moon?
I combined the simple grape plant with some nanotech, and voila! The plants can sense an intruder's intentions and then subdue them until further security personnel arrive. Melda thinks they make a great low-cost alternative to bots. They are functional and ornamental. Melda says they are some of my best work. We were in the final stages of testing how long they can hold an intruder when you so rudely interrupted.
Melda walked over to me and extended her hand.
You must be Zachary Nixon Johnson.
If I'm not, the wrong person is wearing my trench coat and fedora.
Randy says you have quite the wit.
Melda was a tall, striking woman. I would have thought her blue hair would have looked awkward on her dark Asian skin, but the combination somehow worked. I knew this woman could probably twist Randy around her little finger without even trying. Who knew what she could do to him if she put some effort into it?
Well, I'd probably be dead 1,000 times over if it wasn't for Randy's inventions.
Yes, he says that often, too. We're hoping that we can implement some of his genius on the moon.
Randy gave Melda a toothy grin, then blushed.
Melda's not only beautiful and a great judge of character, but she's also a brilliant scientist.
Randy was crushing on her bad, and this couldn't be good. He turned to me.
Melda really thinks that all the work I did for you is especially ingenious.
Randy may be one of the greatest minds on Earth, but he's also a first-class, no-holds-barred geek. A pretty face on a great body can make him babble like a drunk actor accepting an award. Randy's eyes filled with admiration as he looked at Melda. I could only hope she was as worthy of his respect as he believed. Randy forced himself to remove his gaze from Melda, who was doing a yoga stretch, and return his attention to me.
Why are you here, Zach?
One of your many emails mentioned my gun was ready. Randy stood there, staring at me. His wide eyes became narrow in concentration. My gun, the one I keep up my sleeve. I dropped it off last week.
Ah, yes. That gun. It's ready now. It's in my main lab.
Funny thing is, last week all you had was the main lab.
That's not funny at all.
I agree. Dr. Poole had the Arboretum built 5 days ago.
It's mostly a prefab. It's amazing what you can do if you have some extra credits and a lot of robo-builders.
I wouldn't know.
Follow me, and I'll give you your new gun.
He turned to Melda.
You'll want to see this too, Melda. It's way groovy.
As we walked, I thought about how Randy had recently come into that wealth of extra credits. One of his inventions, the Pi Hypod, had hit it ultra big. The Pi Hypod, which is short, but not that short, for a portable interactive holographic interface personally optimized device, is basically a mass market, less powerful version of HARV. It's a small device that users wear on their ears or the sides of their heads, whichever they prefer. A Pi Hypod senses a person's thoughts and transmits holographic information and entertainment to him, based on his current needs and likes. It comes in many styles and shapes, none of them being either too big or all that much to look at, but that doesn't stop it from being today's in thing. The scary thing about Pi Hypods, besides people trying to drive and watch them at the same time, is that I know for a fact that Randy's research was funded by all the biggest conglomerates in the world, Anticorp, H-Tech, and Excel. To make matters worse, they are sold exclusively by Ultra Mega Hypermart. To bring matters to the point I don't even want to think about thinking about, they are also fully endorsed by the World Council as a way to instantly deliver important information to everybody. I've come to accept a world filled with constant DNA scans and full-body light x-rays as part of everyday modern life. Dosh, I've even learned to take advantage of these when I need an extra bit of data to crack a case. But there's something about the government and big corps having direct access to people's minds that scares me. A lot. Randy is constantly reassuring me that only good can come from the Pi Hypods. The devices simply read people's needs and transmit relevant information to them. The devices can't be used to program people. They are also not recording people's thoughts and sending them thought-appropriate advertisements. At least, not yet. I knew it would be just a matter of time before some greedy marketing exec started spamming people's brains. Harv insists that I'm just paranoid. In my game, a little paranoia can go a long way toward keeping you alive. We entered Randy's main facility. It was much cleaner and far less chaotic than normal. Yep, Randy was putting on his best face for Melda. No good could come of that. Randy worked best when he let chaos guide and inspire him. Necessity may be the mother of invention, but chaos is what drives the necessity. One advantage of having Harv wired directly to my brain is that we can actually think back and forth to each other. That's something Pi Hypods can't do. While Randy led us toward a lab bench, Harv and I conversed mentally. Harv, I need as much as you can give me on this, Melda.
Right. She was born on the moon in 2024. She was the first baby born there.
And?
It's very interesting that she was the first baby born on the moon.
You're stalling, Harv.
I'm not stalling. Nice weather we're having. How about those meds?
Harv may be the most advanced cognitive processor on Earth, but he wasn't very good at stalling. There was something he didn't have any experience with.
Her birthday is August 15th.
Great. Now I know when to send her a holo card.
You don't have to be mean about it. The Earth and the moon don't actually share a lot of data.
Harv didn't need to tell me that. The moon colony was established around 2023, not long after humans and aliens made initial contact. At first, things were all peachy keen with the Earth and the moon, with the latter acting as a huge science research lab and breeding center for aliens. The moon also served as an asteroid deflection point for Earth. Earth and Moon cooperated to build a giant reflector beam that would defend both the Moon and mostly the Earth from any impending asteroid crashes. Both sides got along well for a while, but that was just the drunken honeymoon before the reality and then the greed set in. First, the aliens decided they didn't want a lot to do with us, certainly not to the point where they needed to interact with us on a regular basis. The main reason for this is that aliens think we smell funky. Right off the bat, the Moon lost one of its main functions. The World Council, being as sharp and thrifty as they are, figured they needed another use for the colony. They found one. They declared that the Moon would be used to store materials no longer deemed suitable for the Earth. In other words, we'd give them our toxic waste. The Moon protested, saying they were meant to be an oasis for research and alien contact, not a trash receptacle. The Earth's counterargument was, we have nuclear weapons, so there. The Moon really had no choice but to accept our waste. From there, the relationship went downhill. Both sides still coexist, but the Earth makes it clear that the Moon only exists because the Earth allows it to. For the most part, the Moon accepted that relationship. That is, until a few years ago, when a guy named Boris Bo Sputnik became head administrator of the Moon. Sputnik was quite the rebel. He pushed the World Council to set the Moon free and make it an independent colony. He promised they would still house our trash and protect us from being smashed by an asteroid, but he wanted to set his people free. To their credit, and my surprise, the World Council has voted on the Free the Moon resolution a couple of times. Each time, the resolution has been defeated. If memory served me right, a new vote was coming up pretty soon.
Have you got anything for me yet?
The word no flashed in front of my eyes. I always knew when Harv was frustrated because he would stop talking. That wasn't a good omen at all. Sure, the Moon's computer systems were generally closed to the Earth's computer systems, but that had never stopped Harv before. He was an expert at cracking through the toughest firewalls, even the latest intelligent e-laser walls.
I'll keep working on it while you talk to Dr. Poole.
Sure enough, we'd reached the lab table that my gun was on. I turned my attention back to Randy. It was always best to pay close attention to Randy when he was in proximity to a firearm. Randy smiled smugly as he reached for the gun. To my surprise, his hand passed over my gun and instead picked up a clear plastic rod. Randy showed us the rod proudly.
This is the new Colt 2062.
I shook my head and pointed to my gun. No, it's not. That is.
No, that's the old Colt 4500.
He held the tube up to my face.
This is the state of personal weapons to come.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Randy pulled the tube away from me and displayed it in an open hand for Melda to see. She reached over and touched it.
Nice. And I'm not usually one to like weapons.
It's not a weapon. Randy tossed me the tube. I caught it. It felt like a cross between old Silly Putty, older PVC tubing, and the classic Nintendo Wii controller. I liked the feel. It felt good. Though I wasn't going to admit that. Besides, a weapon should feel right in the hand, not good.
It's tied into your brainwaves and DNA. Wow! It can fire bolts of energy ranging from stun to disintegrate. You can even use the energy from your own body to charge it more.
And that's a good thing because... Randy walked over, smiled, and patted me on the shoulder. It was very uncharacteristic. He's not a big fan of touching.
Trust me, Zach. It is. The energy bolts will even lock onto your target's biosignature and track it. And it is self-generating, so it charges while you move. It's virtually limitless in its power.
I like good old-fashioned lead bullets. Sure, they can be messy, but killing should never be clean and easy.
I knew you'd say that.
Well, you are a mad genius.
True.
The Colt 2062 is also loaded with 5,000 rounds of new and improved nano-lead bullets. The bullets expand and can even split and explode after leaving the barrel.
Only 5,000 rounds?
Well, that should be more than sufficient. Zach, you hold in your hand the most powerful hand weapon ever invented. Also, when interfaced with Harv and your Under Armour, it can generate a shield. Plus, it can fire a mini tractor beam.
Yeah, but does it do windows?
I'm sure on the correct setting you could blast windows clean.
I played with the tubular Colt 2062 in hand, moving it around to get a good feel for it. Doesn't even have a sight.
The sight is intelligent and on demand.
Huh?
Lift your arm up like you want to fire it.
I moved my arm upward, aiming the tube. A targeting sight morphed up from the opposite end of the cylinder. Another computer-generated sight appeared in front of my eye.
The virtual sight also works with Harv's holograph interface.
Where's the trigger?
A trigger? How last week? Just squeeze the handle and it will fire.
Really?
Really.
What keeps me from firing it by mistake?
Software, Zach. Software. Very intelligent, situation-appropriate software. It all works with Harv.
What if Harv is out of commission?
That won't happen.
Just humor me.
The gun has a manual override that will still interface directly with your brain. Just think type of ordnance, then squeeze and it will fire. Besides the standard penetrating and exploding ammo, the nano bullets can also morph into glue, paint, or web.
Randy put a finger to his mouth.
What aren't you telling me?
Gus, activate.
Okay, it's a flashlight too. That's kind of cool.
Now operational.
Okay, so it talks. Not sure if the world really needs another talking gun.
It doesn't talk, it thinks. The gun's user system, or Gus, is the gun's AI.
It thinks?
Yes, it thinks.
I certainly do.
Why do I need a thinking gun?
Why don't you need a thinking gun?
Yes, why does he need a thinking gun?
Randy looked at Harv.
Gus is a backup failsafe, just in case.
Yep.
Gus can make sure the Colt 2062 never falls into the wrong hands.
That was a good point. Of course, with a hand weapon this powerful, I wasn't sure there was such a thing as the right hands.
If I am separated from you, Mr. Johnson, I can find you by rolling myself up and, well, rolling.
Oh, Mr. Johnson, what a suck-up.
I had to give Randy kudos. It seemed to be an impressive weapon, at least in theory. Which led me to my next question.
Has it ever been tested?
In theory, yes.
Is this like the theory that if you put 200,000 monkeys in a room with an old-fashioned word processor, one of them would bang out the next hit holographic movie?
Along those lines, yes. Laymen can be so simple sometimes. It would take at least 940,892 monkeys to make a hit holographic movie. With a mere 200,000, you'd be lucky to get a hit HV show.
So you, in fact, have no idea if it actually works.
Randy crossed his arms and looked at me. Harv did the same. Melda just looked on politely. She didn't know me well enough to ridicule me yet. She may have been laughing on the inside. It was hard to tell.
No? How could I? It's synced to your DNA and brain patterns. This is the first time I've ever activated, Gus.
Can I at least test it?
I thought you'd never ask. Target 001, 010, 011, 100, activate.
I looked around the room. Four targets had fallen from the ceiling, one along each wall. Since we were in the middle of the lab, and it was quite a large lab, each target was at least 200 meters away.
Fire away!
Here in your lab?
It's a very well-built lab. Plus, the bullets, or energy bolts, self-destruct if they miss their target. So, fire at will.
Which one is Will? Randy pointed to the clay duck target on the north wall.
I named the duck Will.
I should have known better than to joke with a scientist. I extended my arm, aiming my gun. The sight popped up. I concentrated on the duck.
I'm ready when you are.
I put the gun down.
Can I do this one myself?
Of course. Just think Gus off.
Randy turned to Melda.
Zach is a little slow sometimes. One too many shots to the head.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Harv nodding in agreement. I turned my attention back to the target.
Gus off.
I picked up the target with my left eye. Adjusting my gun, I pulled, well, squeezed the trigger. The target exploded. I watched pieces of simulated clay falling to the ground like a really ugly snowstorm. I looked at Randy. He was smiling like a proud father. Where's the sound and the recoil?
Sound and recoil are both programmable options if you feel like being macho. In fact, you can have sound and or recoil without firing anything if you wish.
Wow, you've really thought of everything.
Pretty much. Just to prove it.
Randy ducked down under one of the lab benches. He motioned to Melda to do the same. I had a bad feeling about this.
Targets! Attack Zach!
I didn't have to look to know that the targets from the southeast and west walls were heading toward me. Yep, with friends like mine, I didn't need half the enemies I had. Only I could turn from target shooter to target. I spun clockwise, not sure why, other than it just felt more natural. That, and from my positioning in the room, the target on the east side would reach me first. I was thinking without thinking, activating Gus. A targeting cursor appeared in front of my eye. I picked up the east target, its clay pigeon zooming in on me. I aimed my gun. I then turned my body and my attention to the targets coming at me from the south wall. These were actually disc-shaped targets with bullseyes on them. Of course, they were flying at me like a ninja's throwing stars. They were coming down on me fast from every conceivable angle.
I suggest a wide area, low-yield energy blast.
What a super idea!
I thought, aimed, and fired, all in one fluid motion. The attacking targets fell to the ground, as if they hit an invisible wall. Throwing myself to the ground, I felt the last target, or targets, fly past me. Rolling for cover, I stopped in the prone position, peeking up to try to catch a glimpse of the last target. I saw the target was a series of baseball-shaped objects. They'd shot past me, but figured it out, and were now heading back toward me. If they made contact, they wouldn't kill me, but they would certainly sting a hell of a lot. Randy thought you needed pain for gain in scientific progress. Of course, the pain was always mine. Computer tracking on!
How do you know there's computer...
Tracking activated with pleasure!
Suck up.
Rolling over to my back, I sat up. The targeting cursor appeared in front of my eye again, but this time with an arrow pointing left. Sliding my arm to the left, the word fire flashed in front of my eyes. I pulled the trigger. The cursor reappeared with an arrow pointing right. I adjusted my gun ever so slightly until the word fire appeared again. I stood up, shaking target remains off of me. I turned to see Randy was already standing and smiling ear to ear. Randy helped Melda up from behind the table.
Excellent job, Gus. Harv, and you too, Zach.
Thank you.
Incredible.
Zach did the hard part.
He did not.
I know. I'm just trying to make Zach feel good about himself.
Randy walked over to me. If he'd been any more pleased with himself, he'd be patting himself on the back with both hands and nominating himself for a Nobel Prize.
So, Zach, does the Gus Enhanced Colt 2062 pass its field test?
I took out a series of intelligent targets in under a minute with a weapon I hadn't even seen until 10 minutes ago. It certainly was intuitive. I had to give Randy props, just not out loud.
Pretty impressive, isn't it?
It'll do, for now. I popped the Colt 2062 up my sleeve. It felt good there. I'm still gonna keep my knife and a good old Magnum or something similar around just in case.
Zach, you are so old-fashioned. But if it makes you happy, that's fine.
Harv rolled up his virtual sleeve and looked at his watch.
Zach, if you're going to make your breakfast appointment with Electra at the Lombard Street Bistro, I suggest we leave now.
You have anything else for me to test?
Zach, I just gave you the most sophisticated personal weapon in human history. I've connected you with the most advanced cognitive processor on the known planets. What more could you possibly want? At least for the next few months.
Well, the winning lottery numbers would be nice.
You don't want to miss your breakfast out with Electra.
It was a pleasure meeting you, Melda.
The pleasure was all mine.
How long are you on Earth for?
A day or two longer.
Well, I hope we meet again.
Somehow, Mr. Johnson, I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will.
A couple of years ago, I could have driven from Randy's lab near the pier to the Lombard Bistro in less than 10 minutes. This was because not only did I enjoy driving my slightly modified 1973 cherry red Mustang convertible fast, but back then I had the roads pretty much to myself. I only had to share them with a bunch of grannies who refused to use hovercrafts, teleporters, or the most scary of all, public transportation. Land-based travel had fallen out of favor with the general populace. It was too slow for today's fast-paced lives. That was fine by me. I didn't mind having the roads to myself. That all changed almost overnight. To begin with, there was the first teleporting accident in history. 10 Ultra Mega Hypermart insurance salesmen got stuck in stasis for 10 hours. None of them were killed, but they were all inconvenienced and missed their sales quotas for the day. For a salesman, that's a fate much worse than death. Much as it pains me to say so, I also contributed to the rise of cars by taking ex-teen pop star, now World Council member Sexy Sprockets for a ride on the ground. Sexy is both an old client and, for some reason unbeknownst to me, now one of the most powerful and influential people on the planet. Not because she's one of the 12 main World Council members, mind you, but because she's a retired, at 20, ex-pop princess. Though she prefers to refer to herself as ex-pop princess, sex goddess, current coolest World Council member in the world. I have no idea how she gets that on her business card. Sexy found the ride completely stimulating. She actually used the word orgasmic, but Electra would kill me in the most painful way possible if she heard that. Sexy was so jazzed by the experience that she announced on a worldwide HV State of the World address that, and I quote, "Ground-based cars are so way past absolute zero, they are smoking red hot." I, being over 30, had no idea what she meant. Others did, though. Thanks to mass media overpromotion and robotic mass production, land-based cars became an instant hit again. Most people couldn't even remember why we left the ground in the first place. Some will now deny that they ever even used a hover. I just shake my head and moan that I now have to share the roads with throngs of others. The 2060s cars are all fly-by-wire and have the same basic sleek bullet-on-wheel shape. All the newer cars are computer-controlled, so the drivers are more riders than anything else. Excel and H-Tech, makers of most of today's cars, justify this same-as-the-next-guy look by claiming that cars come in millions of downloadable and customizable colors for the car body, wheels, and windshields. They also state the driving experience is limitlessly customizable as the car's users have complete control over the internal experience, the sounds the car makes, the holographic displays on the windows, and the type of coffee it serves. I take some solace in the fact that my car isn't almost totally computer-driven, and that it is style and class. It was just like the ones my ancestors drove nearly 100 years ago. Harv appeared in my car's dash. Okay, maybe not exactly like the ones my ancestors drove. Back then, this car wouldn't have a computer interface and be solar-powered. But outside of those two tiny concessions to the modern world, that was it. Harv pointed to the left.
I've checked with the traffic satellites. You should take Reagan Avenue.
Sorry, can't do.
Oh, Zach, I don't believe you won't drive on a street because of its name. After all, he was one of the finest presidents in history. You are going too fast.
I just think Clinton deserves his own street, too. After all, he was a great president.
Oh, please. He was the third best politician in his own immediate family.
Ah, come on, Harv. He was a man's man. And a ladies' man.
That's your criteria for a good president? How about adding Spiffy Dresser to the list?
Not my only criteria, but I like the guy. He's like the Elvis of presidents. Harv just looked at me through the screen. Then he looked at his watch.
We should be at the bistro in a few minutes. I suggest we don't talk so you can concentrate on the road. The traffic is very heavy these days.
Harv disappeared from my screen. I drove on in peace to meet Electra. I arrived at the top of Lombard Bistro only 10 minutes late, which is pretty much a record for me. The bistro was a quaint little outdoor place that still employed only human waiters and waitresses. I found Electra sitting at a table in the middle of the floor, sipping on an ice water. Sorry I'm late.
With you, mi amor, 10 minutes late is early.
A pigtailed waitress in a plaid micro-mini walked up to our table. She handed me a menu. I waved it away.
I just have bacon and eggs and coffee. Lots of coffee.
Real bacon or simulated soy bacon?
I looked at her. I pointed to myself. These days, folks dress in many eclectic ways. This is the anything-goes era. To look at me, though, you knew I wasn't into the latest dress fads. I'm an old-fashioned guy, despite the computer attached to my brain and the high-powered mini-army I keep up my sleeve. The waitress studied me.
You're not wearing a pahai pod, you need a shave, and your face has some lines in it, and you're wearing a really funny old hat.
It's called a fedora.
I bet you want the real bacon.
Bingo.
Real eggs or soy eggs?
I'm still me.
I'll put you down for real eggs.
Smart girl.
I'm not just a waitress. I'm also an actress.
Nobody's just a waitress.
Real coffee or soy coffee? I'll put you down for the real coffee. That's 3 credits extra.
I'll splurge.
And you, ma'am?
The fruit platter of the day with more ice water.
Very good choice.
So, problems at Randy's?
I got attacked by a couple of plants.
Fine. Don't tell me.
Randy's hanging out with some tall, exotic woman from the moon.
Really? What does she want with Randy?
She's there observing his methods. Of course, he's crushing badly on her. It's not gonna end well.
Geeks and babes. It's the age-old story.
The trip was pretty beneficial, though.
The Colt 2062 popped into my hand.
So now you carry your HV remote around with you. Oh, I'm scared.
It's not a remote or a joystick. It's my new gun.
Really?
Really?
Your gun talks.
Tell me about it.
I'm the gun's user system. You can call me Gus.
Electra lowered her eyes and sat back in her chair.
Your talking gun has a name.
Such is my life. It's very chipper.
Sure am.
Harv hates it, therefore Gus is growing on me.
Aw, thanks.
for the man who has everything, a talking gun.
She took the weapon from my hand. With an electronic conscience.
You're kidding.
I wish I was. Electra steadied the gun in her hand.
It has a nice feel to it. I assume it will only fire for you.
Yep.
So there was a woman from the moon with Randy.
Yeah.
That's an interesting coincidence.
How so?
She reached into her pocket and pulled out her personal paper computer. She unfolded it in front of me, then she pressed a button.
We are honored to invite you to the moon for the first annual Amigo Relating Culture, or ARC, conference. The purpose of this world-altering event is to gather the greatest 5,000 minds on Earth to share culture and ideas with their friends on the moon. Do you believe it? They say I'm one of the 5,000 most influential people.
I'm not surprised. A chill ran down my spine. First the moon woman, then the fancy new gun. Now Electra was going to the moon. This was beginning to feel like I was going to hit one of those stretches I seem to get into every year, where the universe and I have a love-hate relationship going on. It usually falls into my lap to save the universe, well, at least my small part of the universe, while the powers that be throw everything they've got at me to stop me. I turned to see a shapely lady looking on in horror as the baby carriage he must have been pushing was careening down the street. I grabbed the Colt 2062 from Electra and rushed into action. I darted into the street. The carriage was rolling straight down, so I decided to cut a diagonal path through the traffic to close the gap between the carriage and myself as quickly as possible.
I'm pumping more blood to your legs so you can run faster. I'm also tracking all the cars on the street now, so hopefully you won't get splattered all over the pavement.
Without a doubt, rushing across a busy street during morning rush hour wasn't the brightest thing I've ever done in my life. Sadly, though, it was far from the dumbest. As for the difficulty level of dodging traffic, it was par for the course of my life. Despite my best efforts, I was still only halfway across the street and only through one direction of traffic. I was closer to the carriage lurching downhill, but still not close enough. No way I was going to reach it in time. It was a sheer miracle that the carriage hadn't tipped over yet. There couldn't have been much time left. I needed to act fast. I stopped in the middle of the street. I lifted up my Colt 2062.
I'm going to need the tractor beam, Gus.
Splendid idea.
The problem was I couldn't get a clear shot with all the traffic zooming by.
Han, stop the traffic.
That would be illegal, Zach.
Explain the situation to the car's computer automated pilot systems. I'm sure they'll understand. It's a baby, Harv.
Message relayed to the cab systems.
I glanced around. All the cars on the street had slowed down and were pulling over. I adjusted the Colt in my arm.
All right, let's lock and...
Well, lock.
Got it.
The carriage came to an abrupt halt. The baby in the carriage went flying upward.
For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction.
Newton's second law.
Out of pure reflex, I squeezed the trigger again, releasing the carriage. As the carriage continued its unguided roll down Lombard Street, I aimed at the flying baby. I squeezed the trigger again. The baby stopped falling and hung there suspended in midair.
I deduced that you wanted to catch, not destroy, the occupant of the carriage.
Good deduction, Gus. I worked my way across the street, positioning myself right under the wrapped baby. By this time, the mother and her camera crew, which I just noticed, had also made it down the hill.
My baby!
I motioned for her to stay back and to give me room. I had the Colt 2062 pointing upward. I needed to cut the power, then catch the baby.
Just turn the handle right. It will allow the baby to fall slowly.
So I moved my wrist ever so slightly to the right. The baby started to lower. Moving my wrist a little more right, the baby lowered more. So I turned my wrist even more.
Too much.
The baby started to plummet. I dove to the ground, hands extended like a wide receiver lunging for a football. I hit the ground, never letting my eyes leave the baby. I caught the baby a couple of centimeters from the ground and pulled her toward me. He, or she, licked me. Yeah, I said licked me. The baby was either really ugly or a dog. The young woman, who I now recognized as mass media darling Madrid Ramada, came rushing over to me. She grabbed the baby, dog, from my arms and started kissing it on the lips. Then she turned to me and kissed me on the cheek.
Mwah.
I wasn't sure if I was offended or glad. Madrid Ramada is one of those famous people who's famous just because she's famous. If the media wasn't constantly harping on her every move, she would have no claim to fame at all, except for being born rich. Yet in a sort of catch-22 of fame effect, the media couldn't get enough of her, which in turn fueled more and more coverage about who she was dating, who she wasn't dating, what size dress she wore, and what type of deodorant she used. You name it, the press, and therefore the mass populace, wanted to know. She's constantly being hawked by her own impersonal press corps. Madrid took a step back and sized me up.
I know you.
Zachary Nixon Johnson, Ms. Romata.
How do I know you?
I made a bit of press a couple of times when I saved the world as we know it.
No. It's from something really important.
I took Sexy Sprockets for a ride in my Mustang once.
Everybody has taken Sexy for a ride in their Mustang.
I pointed at my car parked across the street. It's not a euphemism. I really did take Sexy for a ride. My classic car. Madrid put the sunglasses back on. She looked toward my car. She pushed a button on the top of the glasses. I assumed it was a zoom lens.
That's right! Sexy was one of my dearest friends. How could I forget about you taking her for a ride?
I also saved her life.
Yes, I suppose that's important too. So, Mr. Johnson, what do you want for saving my baby?
Nothing. It's part of my job. She looked at her wrist communicator.
Oh, I get it. You want to have sex with me. I'm free from 2:15 to 2:45.
Ah.
That's not what he meant, bitch.
The press started up with their cameras and recorders. Madrid glared at Electra, then back down.
Dr. Gavada.
You two know each other?
A few years ago, I helped her make some things smaller and a couple things bigger.
No need to go into boring details.
She walked up and put her arms around Electra and me.
E here and I are old friends.
Then she turned to me.
I just want to thank you, Zach, for saving my baby. You are truly one of the last noble men.
A meek little assistant ran up to Madrid.
Miss Ramada, you're due for your fitting in 5 minutes. You know how huffy Ronaldo gets if you're late.
I swear, that man is a bigger diva than I am.
And with those words, Madrid and her posse strutted off.
You operated on her?
It funded 2 wards on my clinic.
She looked at her watch.
Speaking of the clinic, I'm late.
Will I see you before you head to the moon?
Of course.
As I neared my office on the bay, I noticed a throng of people assembled just outside my door. Examining them, I noticed they were mostly teenage girls.
They can't be waiting for me.
I pulled my car into its parking spot. Instantly spotting me, the girl stormed the car.
Your saving of Madrid's dog, Baby, has been Baha'i podcast all over the world. The major news networks are calling it a true act of courage.
How am I supposed to get inside?
You do have a gun.
I can't go shooting a mob of teenage girls.
I do have a heavy stun mode.
Not the good guy thing to do. I can see the lawsuits already.
Well, you can't just stay in your car.
For the moment, I didn't see why not. In my career, I faced high-paid assassins, killer ninjas, mutants of all shapes and sizes, giant elves, a mad gorilla, battle bots, attack dogs, tons of guard bots, angry androids, and a bevy of superhuman females. Tweet, that day alone I'd wrestled with killer plants, been targeted by targets, and dodged oncoming traffic to save a dog. Yet I never felt as helpless as I did at this moment. I needed help, and I needed it quick. Suddenly, the girl stopped. I noticed that all their eyes were glassed over.
Carol?
My assistant Carol was in the office and had taken charge of the situation. The girl surrounding my car had dropped to all fours. I saw Carol coming out of the office door smiling. She walked up to my car and opened the door.
Because they act like sheep, I make them think they are sheep.
We walked through the hordes of teens, mentally turned to sheep, and into my office. I shut the door behind us and activated the office's defense shielding.
Send them home, please.
On all fours?
It's up to you.
I walked from her reception area into my main office. There, in my office, was a shapely woman sitting with her legs crossed on my desk. She had with her 2 large goons in suits, one standing on each side of the door. There was also a rotund man slinking around behind her. I popped my weapon into my hand and slashed the goon on the right across the face with it. The thug to the left tried to grab me. But Carol caught him with a telekinetic blow to his stomach, doubling him over.
Sorry, tío. All the teeny bopper buying must have clouded my sight senses.
I pointed my gun at the woman sitting on my desk.
What's the meaning of this?
The man behind her approached me slowly, keeping his hands where I could see them. He was a big man, but he was more round than muscular. He didn't look like your standard hired muscle. I kept my gun trained on him as he approached.
Please, Mr. Johnson, this is not what you think it is. Let me introduce ourselves.
He slowly and cautiously touched his wrist holocommunicator. The image of a business card appeared. It read, Carlos Wolf, personal assistant to Maria C. Perez, Universal Insurance Company.
You're from my insurance company?
Yes.
You know,
I kind of think I prefer the standard H-mail telling me you raised my premiums.
Maria pointed at me. She was an older woman, but still pretty easy on the eyes.
I'm sure your computer has confirmed who my assistant and I are, so you may lower your weapon.
I don't know. My premiums are pretty high. I'm still kind of tempted to shoot you.
Without warning, my gun jerked from my hand and flew into Maria's.
What the? She's a Sai! How come I didn't pick that up?
My gun won't work for anybody but me.
Maria looked at Carol.
Sit down and be quiet until I tell you to speak.
Carol obediently sat down, legs crossed, thumb in her mouth. Maria looked at me.
I don't need weapons, Mr. Johnson.
So I see.
She caught Carol off guard, so she must be at least Class 1, Level 6. Tread lightly, Zack. Killer thugs have nothing on insurance company salespeople.
Maria released my gun. It floated back to me. She was definitely not afraid of me.
You did a really stupid thing today, Mr. Johnson.
You're gonna have to be more specific.
You rushed into traffic to save a dog.
One, I didn't know it was a dog. Two, I knew the cars were computer controlled, so the odds of me being hit were pretty slim.
Mr. Johnson, there's no need to be defensive. While we, as your insurance provider, certainly don't condone your actions, the masses found them quite appealing.
Your point being?
We would like you to be our official spokesperson. Your catchphrase will be, if they insure me, they'll insure anybody.
You gotta be kidding me.
Maria pointed at me. The mere gesture pinned me to a wall. She strutted over to me. She lifted her finger up. I rose up off the ground. She dangled her finger under my nose.
Do I look like I'm fooling around? Your choice is simple. Do the nice, dignified ad, or bark our jingle naked.
Hi, this is Zachary Nixon Johnson. If World Insurance insures me, they'll insure anybody.
Maria lowered me to the ground.
Very good.
When she snapped her fingers, Carlos moved forward, pulling a paper-thin computer from his back pocket. He unraveled the computer to show me the contract.
Trust me, it's fair. Just give us your DNA print.
I touched the screen with my thumb. Carlos turned the paper computer over, looked at it, and smiled.
Very good.
Maria glanced over at the two guys Carol and I had clobbered.
Wake up! Follow me out on your knees.
Maria gave me a polite wave, then left, followed by Carlos, followed by the men crawling behind her. I had to admit, she certainly had style. As she walked by Carol, she gave her a pat on the head.
Back to normal, little one.
Carol stood up and shook her head.
That was annoying.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
You have a call coming in.
Who is it?
Sexy.
Sprocket?
Do you know anybody else named Sexy?
Take a message.
She says she needs to see you urgently.
She's probably just jealous that I saved Madrid's dog.
That would match her M.O. I also screened over 100 messages for you.
Why so many?
Check your wall screen.
I looked at the images scrolling across my wall screen. Most of them were of me, diving to catch the little poodle. I was the flavor of the nano, all right. I needed a break. I couldn't handle much more of that day.
Harv, can you bury my home address?
Of course.
I want to go home and make sure I'm not mobbed by the press or fans.
Don't worry, Zach. As is par for the course, I'm already many steps ahead of you.
You are?
I removed your home address from all databases the nano you caught that puppy.
You know, I don't care what I say about you. You're all right, Harv.
Yes, I'm well aware of that.
I went to grab my coat and hat, then realized I hadn't even had time to take them off. I couldn't have Harv scramble the address of my office. After all, I am a PI. I need clients to be able to find me. Now my house, that was off limits. In the old days, they used to have unlisted telephone numbers. Thanks to Harv, I would have an unlisted address. I liked it that way. I figured that anybody who would want to see me already knew where I lived. Back in my living room, I plopped myself down on the couch. It was just lunchtime, and already I'd had a very full day. Tweet, the adventures I'd had that day were enough to fill up the average Joe's event meter for a lifetime. But for me, of course, it was just another slightly busy Tuesday. I kicked my feet up on the ottoman and leaned back on the couch,
ceiling screen on.
You'll get a kink in your neck.
Just do it.
My ceiling lit up with pictures and information. Unfortunately, most of it was about me. At least 12 channels were rerunning my catch of the dog. The art channel was giving my life story. The cooking channel had a special, Zach Johnson's Favorite Meals. In between shows, my commercial for World Insurance ran.
This can't be good.
I reached under a couch cushion and drew my good old-fashioned Colt 44 I keep there, just in case. The 44 may not have the firepower of the 2062, but it looked like a gun, and therefore carried more intimidation factor. Who's at the door?
You're not going to believe it.
Try me.
It's Sexy Sprockets and her bodyguards.
What?
It's Sexy Sprockets and her bodyguards!
I popped my 44 into my ankle holster and headed to the door. There stood Sexy Sprockets in all her glory. Behind her was her personal bodyguard, Shannon Cannon. Behind them were at least five people in black battle armor.
Zack, thank Gates you're home.
Sexy walked into my house. Shannon Cannon followed her in, then secured the door behind her. Sexy, how'd you find me? My house is unlisted.
Remember? You brought me here once during my Rockstar days.
I remember. I'm just shocked you could find the place.
I'm not half as dumb as people think I am.
She walked into my living room and sat down on my couch.
I am so glad that I saw that insurance ad you're in. That reminded me that you are probably the only person I know who can help.
Sexy, you're being more confusing than normal. Shannon walked over and placed her hand on Sexy's shoulder. It was the first time I noticed that Shannon had dyed her hair blue. That meant she was a moon supporter, commonly known as a moony or a mooner. She glared at me.
Can't you see Sexy is scared?
I had to admit that Sexy did look more unnerved than I'd ever seen her. What are you scared of, Sexy?
Threya Thompson.
Now that was something I wasn't expecting. Threya is one of the three remaining Thompson quads. She and her sisters, Ona and Tua, may be the most physically and mentally powerful beings on Earth. Ona is a wealthy businesswoman. Tua is a superhero. Threya calls herself a fairy princess who claims to live in a magical realm. I helped the three of them stop their sister Fora, who, believe it or not, had been crazier than all of them put together, from destroying the world. The thing is, Threya had always been the most easygoing of the sisters. Sure, she threatened to rearrange my molecular structure once when I killed one of her trolls, not as unusual as you may think, but for the most part, she was as level-headed as a superwoman who professes to be a fairy princess can be. Why are you scared of Threya?
Apparently, she's never paid a province income tax.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Zack, she's worth close to 100 million credits, but she claims to live in a mysterious realm beyond our dimension, which is preposterous.
I don't know. Have you ever met Threya?
No, I've only been threatened by her. She refuses to pay her taxes. So when I sent a warning to her, my lawyer came back on all fours with a tail and barking. He managed to bark out that if I insist on forcing Threya to pay taxes in New California, she'll turn me into a toad. I don't know if she means a real toad or just make me think I am a toad, but neither is high on my list. You know how hard it would be to do council stuff and date and stuff if I was a frog?
Threya likes to talk. I'm sure it was an idle threat. We all turned toward the noise. To see two of Sexy's armor-clad bodyguards flying through my door. Before I could do anything, the last three guards followed their co-workers. Shannon leapt in front of Sexy. I popped my Colt 2062 into my hand. Sexy eyed my strange weapon.
Really, Zack? This is no time for HV.
A large, bald head peeked in. Now, when I say large, I mean this was a head the size of a normal man. The head ducked down. The body it was attached to lumbered into the room. The ceilings in my house are over 4.5 meters high, but he still scraped his head. An ogre?
Zack, this has nothing to do with wild sex parties.
That's orgy.
Oh, right.
Sexy sank back behind us. I sized up the ogre. The only thing more noticeable than his girth was his disfiguration. His nose was bent in more places than I could count and stretched down his face, overlapping his mouth. The teeth his mouth did have were sharp and jagged. He vaguely reminded me of the caveman I saw in museums, only three times as large and even more macabre. To complete the caveman ensemble, he was dressed only in a fur rag and carrying a large wooden club.
Oh, that club so does not go with that outfit.
Hey, that was an antique door! The ogre looked at my door lying smashed on the floor. Then he looked at the dent in my doorframe. He scratched his head.
Sorry, Mr. Johnson. Mistress Threya has no quarrel with you. I'm sure she will make remuneration.
The ogre pointed a long, bent index finger at Sexy,
His fingernails look like claws.
You're the one she wishes to speak to.
Make an appointment with my assistant's assistant's assistant, and I'll squeeze her in next year.
The mistress does not work that way.
He took a step forward. I pointed my gun at him. Sexy's under my protection now.
Screw that.
Shannon stood straight and threw out her rather impressive chest.
Sexy is under my protection.
She focused her glare on the ogre. I was all too familiar with that look. She was blasting him with mental energy. The ogre knew this and seemed to be amused by it.
Ogres are immune to mental attacks.
Let's see how you handle this.
She hit the ogre with her toxic breath.
Oh, please. I'm an ogre. We live for toxic things like that.
So Shannon took a karate stance.
Let's see what you've got, big man.
It didn't take my keen PI intellect to know how this was going to turn out. Shannon may have been a very powerful mutant Psy, but she was out of her league when dealing with something from the mind of any of the Thompson sisters. Shannon hit him with a sidekick in his oversized beer belly. Well, it was probably an ale belly. If the ogre felt it, he didn't show it. He put his palm on Shannon's shoulder. What was that, the Vulcan nerve pinch?
There isn't much to do in Thria's realm, so I watch a lot of ancient TV.
Then he moved toward us. I had to give him credit. He had style, in a vulgar and geeky sort of way. The thing was, I couldn't let him harm Sexy. I aimed my weapon at him. The laser sights turned on, locking on his head and chest. I'm betting you're not immune to high-powered weaponry.
You'd win that bet.
The next move caught me totally off guard. He swiped at me with his club, knocking the Colt 2062 out of my hand and sending it flying across the room. Moving quicker than I thought he'd be capable of, the ogre went to give me the Vulcan nerve pinch. I anticipated his move, ducking under his massive hand. He swung backward at me, though. Luckily, he, like so many of my opponents in the past, had underestimated me. He thought that swat would knock me out cold. I'm a lot tougher than people think. Of course, the carbon-reinforced Under Armour helps. The ogre was now ignoring me, concentrating solely on Sexy. That was his first mistake of the fight. I reached down to my ankle holster and grabbed my good old Colt 44. Not wanting to give him a chance to react, I lifted it up and pulled the trigger. The bullet hit the ogre square in the back, and he exploded into a cascade of bubbles. Now that was different. Harv appeared next to me for the first time since the fight began. Where the tweet were you when the chips were down?
The ogre emits some sort of computer dampening field. I was working my way around it.
I walked over to Sexy and helped her up. See, that wasn't so bad, was it? Harv tapped me on the shoulder, which wasn't that easy for him to do since he was a hologram. If he was expending the energy needed to do this, then something was up. He pointed out my living room bay window. Three more ogres had appeared. These had long hair and saggy breasts. Females, I'd guess.
I compute that they are mad because you destroyed their mate.
I opened up my hand. Yo, Gus, come to me.
With pleasure.
The Colt 2062 rose from the floor and floated across the room into my hand.
Cool weapon. You going to blast them? I like blasting them.
That's when it occurred to me. If Sexy, an ex-teen pop star turned world politician, liked the idea, there had to be something wrong with it. Thria had nearly unlimited mental, physical, and financial resources. If I got into a pissing contest with her, she'd drown me. Please excuse that metaphor. There had to be a better way. Then I remembered something. Grabbing Sexy by the hand, I pulled her into the hallway. We raced down the hall into my master bedroom.
Why, Zach, I'm flattered, but I'm a big fancy pants politician now. I can't just jump into bed with you.
But she pulled off her shirt and hopped onto my bed.
We have to issue a statement denying it first.
I headed to my dresser and pulled out the bottom drawer.
You know, if you bought a modern dresser, you would always know where everything was, and you'd never have to manually open a drawer.
Yeah, well, I need the workout. Oh, and Sexy, put your shirt back on.
You could tell me what you're looking for. I do have a much better memory than you.
Ha-ha! There was no need for Harv's assistance as I found what I was searching for. I pulled it out and showed it to Harv. It was a simple metal bell attached to a pink stick of wood.
Okay, he's lost it.
Hardly. This bell was given to me by Thria after I stopped her sister Fora from sucking the world down a black hole.
Yeah, that would have been a real bummer. At least on my case, you only needed to save a good portion of the Northern Hemisphere.
I hit the bell.
Thria appeared in the room in all her glory. She looked at me in shock. Sexy looked at me in more shock. She leapt off my bed.
How dare you call me? How dare you call...
Suddenly, Sexy was now on all fours. I looked at Thria. She had a smile of satisfaction on her face. She patted me on the shoulder, kind of like she would a pet.
Oh, I see your plan now, Zachary. Bring me right to my enemy.
That wasn't my plan. Sexy was now contentedly licking Thria's feet.
It should have been your plan, because I like it. Good Zach, good Zach.
Thria, I brought you here to call off your ogres and to appeal to your logical side.
Wow, nobody's ever tried that before.
To get you to call off your ogres?
No, appealing to my logical side.
Thria, I know you're powerful beyond compare, but even you can't take on the entire world.
Well, I don't want to take on the entire world, just the World Council.
They have a lot of resources to throw at you.
I have a lot of resources, too. I'm lady and mistress of my own realm.
Harv, how much is Thria worth?
Roughly 127,898,001 credits.
Thria, you're worth over 100 million credits.
What's your point?
My point is, if you donated a percentage of that to the World Council as, say, taxes, that money could go to help this world.
Thria straightened herself up.
I'm not a huge fan of this world. It's kind of a mean world. Look how badly they treat the moon.
For the first time, I noticed Thria had blue hair. She was a moony. But by giving money, you could help set an example that the World Council can learn from.
Zach, they are politicians. Do you really think they can learn anything?
There's always hope, Thria.
Lead by example. It's crazy enough that it just might work. I will take it under advisement.
She looked behind her at Sexy, who was now in the universal doggy I surrender position.
She is a cute pooch. Tell her she has nothing to fear from me or my minions. At least for now.
Got it. She held out her open hand. She wanted me to place something in that hand. I have no idea what you want, Thria. Harv moved over next to me and bowed to Thria.
Thria, it's always a pleasure to process your image.
Thria held out her other hand to him.
Oh, the pleasure is mine, Harv.
She gave Harv a polite little curtsy. It was a bit off-putting that my computer was smoother than I was. Harv turned his head toward me while his body was still facing Thria. This was one of the times Harv really took advantage of the fact that he was a hologram.
Give her back the bell.
Really?
Zach, she's not going to forget about it just because she can't see it. She's a powerful fairy princess, not an ostrich.
You really want your bell back?
I said you may summon me once with that. You have. Now I need it back.
I placed the bell in Thria's hand. She smiled, then disappeared in a puff of smoke.
She must have some personal teleporter I can't detect.
Sexy stood up and shook her head.
What happened? And why do I taste feet?
I talked to Thria. Things are gonna be okay now.